Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck, live on Dash Radio Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. So welcome back in this shortened version of Locked On Bulls today as we get ready to preview the Golden State Warriors game tonight. Jordan Bell gets to showcase himself at the United Center. I hope Bulls fans are going to show out strong tonight. And I don't know if there's going to be a mix of boos for Jordan Bell tonight or if there's going to be a mix of boos if he plays well. Like, I don't know what the dynamic is. I don't know if people
maybe some sarcastic applause.
Maybe, but I don't, like, it's a weird dynamic because, like, Bulls fans, I feel like they obviously wanted Jordan Bell. Do they hate him now that he's with the Golden State Warriors? Like, I don't know. For me, as a Bulls fan, I'm kind of irritated that I'm not only irritated that the Bulls sold the pick and mad that they sold the pick, but now that what Jordan Bell's turned into, and dude, I feel like in his rookie year already, he's got kind of sort of an arrogance to him a little bit, and maybe that's just spreading out throughout, like, what the Warriors do and how the confidence level of the Warriors is so high that maybe that's kind of just rubbing off on Jordan Bell. Or if he was that type of player in college too, I never thought he was that type of player in college, but I think the confidence in his game and sort of what the Golden State Warriors are doing right now, I think, is bringing a new level of confidence for Jordan Bell. But outside of if the Bulls were never involved in talks with Jordan Bell, he would have definitely been somebody that kind of irritates me just because he's a rookie and he kind of spews his mouth off once in a while. Like, it's like, all right, dude, we get that you're good, but you have the 10th most minutes on the Golden State Warriors right now. Like, you're making an impact, but you're not making that big of an impact where you can run your mouth all the time. I don't know how you feel, but that's just personally my view on it.
I can't deny, I thought it was kind of funny that when they were doing the introductions, because when he started against the Bulls when they played back in November, that was his first career start, and he's getting another start tonight. But, you know, he made those money symbols with his fingers, you know, a la Johnny Manziel. And I mean, come on, that's kind of funny because he knew that Bulls fans were all very aware of who he was and the fact that he was in Chicago wearing a Warriors jersey and not a Bulls jersey. But I feel like, you know, you and I have talked about this before. The whole thing got blown way out of proportion when you think about the fact that he's not even a guy that the Bulls scouted. And in that game the Warriors trounced the Bulls 143-94, I mean, yeesh. It's not like Bell was a big factor. He had a dunk in the game, but he scored 7 points.
Didn't he have
points.
6 blocks in that game, too? Wasn't that the big thing?
He did have 6 blocks, yeah. So he had, like, it was like kind of an impressive stat line across the board. 7 points, 6 blocks, 6 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals. So certainly, like, made his presence felt, but we'll see if he can follow that performance up tonight. We'll see if he adds any kind of, you know, jabbing and poking fun at the Bulls front office or the fans at the United Center tonight, which, by the way, I will be one of. I'm going to the game tonight. I'm very excited because, I mean, come on, it's a chance to watch the Warriors play and let's serve as a measuring stick. Look, you know, and this is something that Steve Kerr said at this morning shoot around. This is a very different Bulls team than the team that lost to the Warriors by 50 a couple of months ago. And Steve Kerr had glowing remarks to say about the job Fred Hoiberg has done, saying, you know, this Bulls offense is beautiful and it's it's effective and fun to watch. And he's not wrong. This Bulls offense has gotten a lot more efficient in recent months, and obviously that has a lot to do with some key pieces that have come back. You know, there was no Nico Mirotic when the Bulls got beaten by 50 the first time around. There was no Zach LaVine. You had guys like Paul Zipser and Felicio each playing 16 minutes off the bench. You had Antonio Blakeney playing 20 minutes off the bench. I mean, this was a different story. Hell, Kay Felder even got into that game. So I'm excited to be there tonight. I'm excited to see the atmosphere. Definitely, not going to lie, excited to see what kind of reaction the crowd gives to Jordan Bell. But also, can the Bulls keep this close and more respectable? Because that game that they ended up losing by 50, they actually, the Bulls held a 32-29 lead after 12 minutes. And then they got beat up in the second quarter, 45-21, beat up even worse in the third quarter, 36-13, and boom, there's your ball game. So can the Bulls keep this one close beyond the first quarter? I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, and I think a big factor, too, you talked about it a little bit yesterday that you said, didn't you say Draymond Green and Kevin Durant are both questionable for tonight's game, too? So that might play a factor.
Draymond has been ruled out, as has Andre Iguodala.
Okay, Andre Iguodala.
So Bell is officially starting.
Classic.
And that was another element to the first game that they played. The Splash Brothers both had huge games. I think, you know, Steph had 33 and Klay 29, but they had no KD and no Draymond in that game. So again, no Draymond, but this time they've got Kevin friggin' Durant. So if the Bulls lost by 50 and the Warriors didn't even have Durant, we'll see what happens, but hopefully they can keep it to a more respectable margin.
I hope tonight, if Jordan Bell is, I don't know where they plan on playing him, either at the four or the five. I hope if he plays the
I'm pretty sure that they're planning on starting him at the four.
I hope Lauri Markkanen just dominates him tonight. Like, I don't know why I have this. I have like this thing. Like, I know that it's funny that Jordan Bell is like, he did the money signs at the Bulls early, and more so the animosity and like the anger and like this show out is more for the Bulls front office than Bulls fans. Cause it's obvious pretty much across the board, everybody wanted Jordan Bell over the $3.5 million in cash that the Bulls got this summer. But there's also that element too that, you know, kind of irritates me about the confidence level that the Golden State Warriors have. Granted that they're allowed to have that. I mean, a team that has arguably two of the greatest players in the NBA right now on their roster and playing as though they are one of the best teams assembled in recent NBA history, if not the entire NBA history. But at the same time, like, I would love to just see Lauri Markkanen come out with that confidence and just dominate Jordan Bell tonight. Even if the Bulls do lose, I think it would be fun to watch. Another thing, too, The Ringer published a story about Jordan Bell just this morning, actually, and it went through some of his, I guess it's like a rookie report card kind of check. It's a sort of like a middle season measuring stick to what Jordan Bell has been doing for the Golden State Warriors. And there's this little paragraph that I want to read to people about sort of his usage with the Warriors and sort of the impact that maybe he'll have after this season's over and going into next season. So it says, Bell, who gets to play in front of Chicago's crowd for the first time as a pro on Wednesday, has excelled in a limited role as a rookie. He is ninth on the team in minutes per game, 14.8, and 11th in usage rate, 14.6. But he has consistently impacted the game when he has been in. Bell has per 36-minute averages of 12.8 points, 9.8 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.7 steals, and 2.6 blocks on 66.4% shooting. He has earned more playing time. There just isn't enough to go around. The Warriors have five traditional big men on their team: Zaza Pachulia, David West, JaVale McGee, Kevin Looney, and Damian Jones, plus three players in Draymond Green, Jordan Bell himself, and Kevin Durant, who can play as small ball fives. Like the rest of the NBA, they are transitioning to a new world where speed trumps size at center. Bell already plays more than any Golden State's traditional bigs. He will only take more playing time from them in the years to come. So I thought this was a kind of a cool little tidbit about Jordan Bell. And like I had said, he hasn't played a whole lot for the Warriors, but when he has been in, he has made a major impact. And just like we had talked about, his athleticism, his length, his size is exactly what fits into Golden State's system. And that's why I'm so curious to to the fact that if he did end up on the Bulls, would his numbers look the same? Would his production be the same? Would his development, even over in a half season, his confidence level, would all that be the same developing in a Bulls team that's trying to rebuild? Obviously, he would have got more opportunity, but would the numbers say the same thing? Would his game say the same thing? Because remember, he's playing under Draymond Green, which is pretty much a spit image of what Jordan Bell is. Like, Jordan Bell is like a Diet Coke version of Draymond Green at this point. So to be able to learn under a guy that was pretty much took the same path as Jordan Bell, I think that was all the more reason why he is playing so well and he's got that mentor for him. That's why I'm wondering, like, if he came to the Bulls, would the production level be that high? Would he have the same confidence that he did here? Would he be even the same type of player that most people are highly touted about, you know, coming into halfway point in this season, over the halfway point in this season? But to me, I think Golden State was a perfect opportunity for Jordan Bell and for his game. And I don't really know if that would have translated had the Bulls taken him with that 38th pick and had he been there.
You also have to keep in mind that you're talking about a rookie. You can say the same thing about the perhaps too quick judgments made on Chris Dunn in year one in Minnesota. And these players, whether it's Bell, whether it's Dunn, their games are going to continue to develop and evolve and ideally improve. So, it's an interesting conversation to say, would Jordan Bell be as effective, as efficient, as whatever, fill in the blank, if the Bulls ended up taking him, if the Bulls did in fact scout him and they did take him with that second round pick. But you don't really know because the environments are different and he would probably be asked to do different things on this Bulls roster. And we still don't know what kind of NBA player Jordan Bell will be. And, you know, if he ends up not being a part of the Warriors dynasty long term and ends up going somewhere else, will he have the same impact as a veteran as he's having right now as a rookie? It's hard to say. That said, it would be very entertaining just from the perspective of seeing what Bulls fans, people on Bulls Twitter have to say about it if he somehow, you know, shows up at the UC tonight and erupts and scores like, you know, 25, grabs 10 rebounds, has another 5 blocks. Like, if he has a monster game, well, the Jordan Bell Bulls conversation could continue. But it's something that you have to try to keep in perspective because this kid has only played in, you know, a half season's worth of NBA games at this point.
True. Last thing to kind of wrap up the Ringer article, which I suggest you go read because it's kind of good too if you're a fan of Jordan Bell outside of just whatever happened between the Bulls and the Golden State Warriors this summer. It is a good article to read on just kind of how Jordan Bell's game is shaping sort of the direction of big men going into the future of the NBA. So in that perspective, I think it's a really good article. It kind of describes how Jordan Bell's game and Draymond Green's game are so similar, but they also it tracks sort of the weaknesses of Jordan Bell's game and where he can improve. But this is the last paragraph in this article, which I think is the most important of all of it. It says, most of the centers taken ahead of Bell in the draft can't force opposing teams to keep another big man in to guard them. Bell, on the other hand, can play bigger players off the floor and force teams to go small and match up with him. Players who dictate matchups usually go in the lottery, not the second round. The rest of the NBA saw Bell as a guy who could thrive only in specific situations. The Warriors saw those situations as the future of the league. There's a positive feedback loop happening with small ball. The more teams play it, the less valuable every traditional five in the league becomes. I talked to one executive who thinks the number of big men in the NBA will be cut in half by 2020. Every team will soon be looking for its own version of Jordan Bell if teams already are. They already needed him on draft night. They just didn't know yet. So I think that's important, and it's kind of weird that like executives are already thinking in terms of 3 years, 2-3 years down the road, where, you know, the traditional center of guys like I don't know, guys like Hassan Whiteside or Dwight Howard or, you know, any center you could think of, Robin Lopez, even for the Bulls, that those centers are going to probably get diminished over the course of the way the NBA is deciding to trend. But it's an interesting take. And I think next year is going to be the big year for Jordan Bell to see where he takes his game and how that level of impact for the Warriors goes on. As they said, you know, four of their big men that they've got right now are going to be unrestricted free agents in the offseason. So I'm sure that Jordan Bell will be handed a much bigger role after the offseason's over here.
Because that's something that the Warriors will continue to have to try to finagle around. You know, obviously when KD came on board, he took less money. They thought for a while this past summer that they would lose Iguodala in free agency. They convinced him to stay. So at some point, there's going to be the other shoe is going to drop for the Warriors as far as who they're giving money to. And, you know, you mentioned some of the older vets they have on this team. You know, David West is another one that comes to mind. So, you know, there's a chance that Bell, who is, you know, on the early stages of a rookie deal, can find his way into a more prominent role out of necessity if, in fact, the Warriors try to keep the main pieces of the dynasty together but suffer some casualties because of the cap. So, yeah, that said, I'm excited to watch him play tonight. I'm excited to see if the Bulls can keep this at least kind of close as I'll be watching. All right, Jordan. Well, we had a packed show yesterday. We kind of went a little long on our conversation about the Rockets-Clippers drama that transpired a couple of nights ago. So we didn't get to our usual Tuesday segment of This Week in Bulls History, the Bulls Time Machine Tuesday. So let's do that now. A couple of really interesting ones that I will toss up to you, and you can share your thoughts with me. This one comes from January 16th, 1993. It's a game the Bulls actually lose to rookie Shaquille O'Neal and the Orlando Magic. The final score after overtime, 128-124. Noteworthy parts of this game: Michael Jordan drops his second highest career point total for a single game with 64 on 27 of 49 shooting. 49 shots for MJ in this one. He didn't get a whole lot of help. Pippen, 17 points. Paxson and Horace Grant, 12 apiece. And for the Orlando Magic, obviously Shaquille O'Neal, who was dominant even in his rookie season, he dropped 29 points and 24 rebounds, adding 5 blocks. But here's the hilarious part of this game that the Bulls fell to the Magic. A familiar name for Bulls fans, Scott Skiles, former Bulls coach, a prominent member of the old NBA Jam video games of the 90s. Skiles played all 53 minutes of this game, all 48 and all 5 of OT, scored 31 points. 31 points and dished out 10 assists. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend former Bulls coach Scott Skiles if he's listening, but I never thought that he had a 31 and 10 game on his NBA resume. Like, who would have thought?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. And like, it makes me think about, too, like, what guys in the NBA nowadays would be allowed to be allowed, especially in the middle of the season like that, to play, to log games, unless you're playing under a guy like Tom Thibodeau, who will throw his starters out there in a triple overtime game already, who've clocked 48, 55 minutes in a game. It reminds me of Jimmy Butler when Jimmy Butler played, what was it, 60 minutes in a game for Tom Thibodeau early on in his rookie year. It was either in his rookie year or a year after that. I remember he logged 60 minutes in a game that went to double, triple overtime, but I feel like games like that for players and shot totals, like you had said, with MJ shooting 49 shots, like that's almost unheard of now in the NBA. And that's what's crazy to me is like you go 25, 30 years out from where we are right now, 20, 25, 30 years out, and you look at the difference in the way the game has developed. And I think that's like, it's so underplayed in how the NBA is transitioned and the way the game has transitioned. And I know you get all these old timers that say, you know, the NBA was better in the 80s and the 90s. Like my parents, my dad specifically too, who loved the NBA in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. He's not a huge fan of the NBA now, and he just doesn't like the way the style is played. And I think he is absolutely crazy for that. But it's every time I have a conversation with him, you know, no matter where the conversation goes and how many points I have to make about how good the NBA is and how exciting the NBA is right now, he just goes back to saying, you know, what happened to the guys like MJ and Patrick Ewing and Charles Barkley? And that was when the NBA was good. Magic Johnson, all these. I'm like, Dad, like, if you pay attention at all, there are superstars on the rise in the league right now. I mean, like, literally one of the greatest players of all time is still playing at the highest peak in his career in LeBron James. And for some reason, I can't find a way to crack some of these people that love their NBA from the 80s and 90s.
It's a different generational thing. And whether it's the game that's played on the court, whether it's the, you know, the slow ground and pound half court offenses that were focused on bigs back in that generation. And, you know, you and I talked in yesterday's episode about how maybe some of that physicality bled into a higher frequency of fights that broke out, and how that doesn't really happen anymore. And now it's just guys knocking on each other's locker room doors after the game. But to your point about how in a lot of those games of that era, it was sort of a one-star thing, whether it was MJ, you know, Jordan and the Jordan eras, or other players that were taking those insane high-volume shots. Even, I mean, if you think back to last season when Russell Westbrook, no KD before the arrival of Melo and Paul George, basically it was Russell Westbrook and nobody. And he was the first guy to average a triple-double since Oscar back in the 60s and, you know, received due credit and accolades for such performances. But His season high, which was also his career high for field goal attempts in that insane season last year for Westbrook, he took 44 shots against the Suns. Even in those insanely high usage percentage situations that Westbrook faced last year and took on, he didn't eclipse 49. I mean, 49 is crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty.
And Westbrook, even though everyone knew that Westbrook was that team and the only part of that team, he still faced criticism from some people for taking that many shots. It's like, well, Jordan kind of did that all the time in the late 80s before he got the help he needed.
That's why, like, when people were slamming Russell Westbrook so hard last year for sort of being a ball hog, doesn't know it, like, people were saying, you know, Russell Westbrook doesn't thrive with other stars on his team because, you know, he's good at being that the one and only guy that was willing to take, like you said, 35, 40, 45 shots in a game. And when he was doing the triple-double thing last year, like, people were giving him a ton of criticism for taking that many shots. And that's why, like, I look at what MJ was doing, and I look at some of these other guys that were leading teams in the 80s and 90s and were putting up these ridiculous amounts of shots per game. And it's like, it's funny to me. It's like, okay, people who want to rip them now, like, kind of look back at some of the other stars back in the 80s and 90s and look how many shots that those guys were taking. And I get it. The game was different. Things were different back then than they are right now. But still, it kind of, you have to kind of put everything into perspective, especially like when you're talking about guys like Russell Westbrook, who had an amazing season last year and like an NBA history of breaking records. But yes, definitely putting in perspective for some people that wanted to hate on Russell Westbrook last year.
All right, absolutely. Before we move on to our second episode of This Week in Bulls History, piece of trivia. So this 64-point performance against the Magic in 93 was MJ's second highest point total ever. Of course, most Bulls fans remember his 63-point performance against the Boston Celtics in Boston in the playoffs in a losing effort. Jordan, do you know MJ's highest ever point total in a single game over the course of his long and impressive career?
Wow, this is going to be really embarrassing. I'm going to get absolutely destroyed if I get this wrong. I want to say, was it 68 points in a game?
Very close. Only one off. It was a 69-point performance, March 28, 1990, against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Bulls win 117-113. Jordan, 23 of 37 from the field, a career high at the time, 18 rebounds as well, dished out 6 assists, went 21 of 23 from the free throw line.
How long do you think it takes for a Bulls player to eclipse that? Do you think Zach LaVine could ever eclipse something like 60 or 70 point night?
If he has himself a Devin Booker kind of night where it's just like, all right,
I was just going to say that.
You know, it's on me tonight. You know, Markkanen's out nursing a sore back. Knock on wood. Let's hope that doesn't happen continuously. But maybe. The way that NBA games are played these days, you know, Kobe had his insane 81-point game against Toronto. Like, it's possible. Obviously, it's And I don't know if we'll ever see a 100-point game again, like Wilt, the Stilt. I just don't see that. But 70? It's doable if a guy gets... I mean, Butler dropped 40 and a half. If you have two halves like that, it's doable. All right, our second Bulls throwback, a 115-99 win over the Bad Boy Pistons on January 16th, 1988. And while MJ did have an impressive box score in this one, 36 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds for a triple-double, also adding 4 steals and 4 blocks, this game was noteworthy for another reason, and it is a brawl that broke out. Obviously, this was not the start of the Bad Boy Pistons-Bulls rivalry. MJ had already taken a handful of cheap shots from Bill Laimbeer at this point in his career, but MJ took a cheap shot from Rick Mahorn in this one, the other duo in that Laimbeer-Mahorn slugfest of a team that they had in their front court, and things escalated. Charles Oakley, MJ's longtime friend and brief stint teammate before he was traded the following summer, came to Jordan's aid. He got into it with Rick Mahorn. Mahorn and Oakley, all of the other teammates from both sides, kind of form a giant pile, a jumble in center court. Bulls coach Doug Collins joins the fray. At some point, he has Rick Mahorn in a headlock. Rick Mahorn pushes Doug Collins and himself, come crashing into the scorer's table. I mean, it is a frenzy of a scene. Jordan and I will throw the video up on our Twitter account for you this afternoon. It is fun to watch because this you started to just really see the bad blood between these two teams. And this was a regular season game in the season that was the first of three straight playoff series where the Pistons took down the Bulls on their way to becoming a championship contender and back-to-back champions. So, you know, the 1988 playoffs was the first time that the Bulls and Pistons faced when people really started to see, oh, this is rivalry. But even in those regular season games in the mid to late 80s, that bad blood was boiling over. And there's actually, if you go back to the old archives of the Chicago Tribune, some great quotes from both Charles Oakley and Doug Collins after this game where they came to the defense of their star player, Michael Jordan, who was, you know, continuously taking those cheap shots, whether it was Laimbeer, whether it was Mahorn. But yeah, the video of that fight is just hilarious because you're like, oh, Doug Collins is about to die. Doug Collins is about to die.
Well, that's funny because it's like, it's ironic with what's gone on early in this week of the NBA, and we've talked about fights. And it's funny, like last night, even in the Timberwolves Magic game, the Aaron Aflalo came out swinging at Bialica on the Timberwolves, got ejected. Like, he didn't land any of the punches. It's funny. It's like we brought up the Robin Lopez-Serge Ibaka fight where they took a couple swings at each other last season. Both of them didn't connect at all, but this was sort of the same case with Aaron Aflalo. Aaron Aflalo came out of nowhere with the swings too last night and tried to hit Bialica over the head. Bialica, you know, 6'10", 230, 240, just put Aaron Aflalo in a headlock and pretty much walked him to center court before somebody could come up and break everything out. So it's funny, we talked about how the NBA doesn't want fights it to happen, but they do. Like, it's professional sports. These are high-paid athletes. These are high competitors. You know, in the brightest spot, it's going to happen, especially in the regular season. So it's kind of ironic that we're talking about a historical Bulls fight that broke out during the regular season, and we've had two fights already this week in the NBA.
Yeah, you think we'll get any scraps or pushes and shoves between the Bulls and the Warriors tonight? Maybe a little Jordan Bell smack talk gets one of the Bulls players riled up? Jordan Bell versus Robin Lopez? I'd pay to see that.
Oh, easily. And I think there's going to be some feelings from the Bulls who got their ass kicked against the Warriors in November. Those guys that were out on the floor there, I think they're going to come out tonight and play with some vengeance, like I had said. And, you know, I hope there's a scenario in which Lauri Markkanen gets a breakaway on that dunk, sort of like how he dunked over Enes Kanter against the Knicks a few nights ago. Look, I hope there's a moment where we either Lauri Markkanen or Zach LaVine or Chris Dunn throws down a dunk on Jordan Bell or something crazy happens that sort of sparks that rivalry for the Bulls. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be Jordan Bell. It could be somebody else on this roster, but I'd love to see something go on, some tensions flare tonight at the United Center.
All right, Jordan, before we wrap up today's show, I want to remind everybody out there that if you're not playing fantasy basketball with us on Draft, you absolutely should be. You can follow us on the Draft app or draft.com at Locked On Bulls, and you can play with us. We'll be playing a six-person draft for tonight's NBA action. We got 10 games, plenty of star players to choose from. Hey, maybe you want to throw a Kevin Durant or Steph Curry in your lineup if you think they're going to go off against the Bulls tonight. But Draft is the best way to play NBA fantasy basketball. And did you know that you have your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why we use Draft. It's our favorite site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And more than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft and are loving it. They agree with us. They're playing. You should play too. You can play in a real live NBA draft right now. You can be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit if you use your promo code LOBULLS. That's right. You can play in a real money draft for free with us, Jordan and myself, just by using promo code LOBULLS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Bulls listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com now. Play for free with the promo code LOBULLS. Locked On Bulls, we are going to be hosting a six-person draft tonight. First come, first serve. If you get in there with us, we'll be doing a draft at 5 o'clock. And hey, guess what? When you sign up, you get a free entry to a $3 draft, and that's what we'll be doing tonight. So you can literally sign up and use your free $3 ticket entry to play with us tonight. 10 NBA games on the slate. A lot of fun. We'll be doing this every Wednesday through the remainder of this NBA season.
Yeah, I promise you, you're going to get hooked on Draft too. I was just telling Matt off air that as we sparked up this draft again, and we created our account, I got hooked on playing on my own personal account this weekend, and I actually have won 5 out of the last 6 days. The one day I didn't lose, Kawhi Leonard was a game time decision. I took a chance on him. I picked him, and he ended up being a scratch. I ended up losing in that. Had he had played, I would have won. I would have been 6 straight days in wins on Draft. I've played all different ones, too. I've played head-to-head matchups, which is really awesome. If you've got a friend, somebody that's talking smack about fantasy, you can go up head-to-head against somebody. You can play up to six-team drafts. You can play 10-team drafts. There's so much to do on Draft, and it's so easy. I got my winnings in 2 days, straight through PayPal. It was awesome. It was so easy. There's no hassle either with dealing with money or any of that. It's easy to deposit, easy to withdraw your money, too, as well. And it's a lot of fun. And like Matt had said, you're not going to get crushed by the pros either. And it's fun to take a look at players. And if you are somebody that likes to sit around and watch NBA basketball all night, this gives you a little bit more of incentive. And who doesn't love winning cash for their NBA knowledge? So, yes, join us 5 p.m. today. We'll tweet out the link on Facebook and Twitter. And so if you're one of the first 6 people to join us, it's going to be a lot of fun. And you'll have some cash to win. One of you guys will be walking away with some cash tonight as well. So to wrap up the show, Matt, I want to throw a quick hypothetical out to you because I saw this come across my timeline this morning before when we were preparing for the show, and I thought this was sort of weird as we're coming up to the trade deadline, and it's interesting for tanking teams especially. So somebody had thrown out this idea. I follow an NBA agent and somebody who works in an agency with a ton of NBA players, very active on Twitter. But somebody had asked him and posed the question about Anthony Davis going to the Lakers and whether or not the Lakers should buy in and give up, put everything that they've got right now on this team pretty much up for grabs and say to the Pelicans, hey, you pick 2 or 3 of the pieces, 3, possibly even 4 pieces on this roster that you like, and we've got a deal. And the one argument for it was that Anthony Davis is one of the few players in the NBA right now that literally every free agent wants to play with. And I mean, who wouldn't want to play with Anthony Davis the way he's dominating right now? I mean, he scored 93 points in the last 2 games he's played in. So I pose this question to you, Matt. If the Bulls were, just hypothetically, if the Bulls were in a scenario where you could take guys like Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, potentially a couple of your first round picks, maybe some other pieces on this roster to make things fit, maybe a Nico Mirotic, to acquire Anthony Davis and sign him to a max deal after, you know, sign him to a max deal, have him here long term, would you do it? Would you give up assets like Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn to bring in Anthony Davis and potentially have a chance to swing or sway other free agents to come in into town? Would you do that? Would you take a chance on that? And from the Lakers' perspective, would you take a chance on that for the, what the Lakers want to do? I know that they've been meddling for 5 years now, 4 or 5 years without going to the playoffs and having any type of success. Would you be a team that's willing to go all in and just sell all your assets off to acquire an Anthony Davis, hoping that he brings in top free agents to come for the future?
It's a tricky hypothetical because in one sense, you know, and probably your first instinct reaction is to say, duh. I mean, you don't pass up the opportunity to get a franchise player like Anthony Davis, especially right now when he is still, you know, everybody's, you know, aware of the fact that he's been in the league a long time. He's a veteran star, but he's still only 24 years old. There's a lot of miles on those 24-year-old legs, but still, if he can avoid further significant injuries over the course of his career, which is always a risk with the NBA's bigs, he still has a lot of NBA dominance ahead of him. So, it, you know, on one side, the answer is duh, obviously. But then you also kind of look back at, you know, recent examples of that happening. And true, when the Knicks sold everything to bring Carmelo to New York, he was a little older than Anthony Davis. He was kind of, you know, middle, starting to be end of his prime years. So if you're talking about doing this with Anthony Davis now, it's a bit more advantageous of a situation. But, I mean, look what happened. That Knicks team, you know, yeah, they added Amari Stoudemire. He was certainly on the downswing at that point in his career. They got to the second round once, I think, in those Carmelo Amari years. So I think, and the Knicks have been a mess ever since. So there is some hesitation to doing a move like that where you say, all right, you can have everything we've got if you give us that one guy, because that one guy better be good enough to deliver by himself or very little help around him. And how often have we seen that work as a model for success in the NBA? Never.
Yeah, and I think...
Or do you have enough faith in that guy being a big enough star, a likable enough guy, a big enough attraction that you can bring somebody to play with him? But also, if that star that you want to bring to play with him is a star that commands a huge friggin' contract, a big salary on an annual basis, do you have what it takes fiscally as a front office to make that work? And what are the other pieces you put around them to make that work? It's a big risk.
I think with talking about specifically with the Bulls, it just obviously would not make any sense because of the history the Bulls have. Like, it's an interesting concept that Anthony Davis from Chicago, and I'm not like saying this is just a complete hypothetical, just keep this in mind as we're talking about this, and it interested me because I was wondering if there are tanking teams out there that would consider acquiring Anthony Davis, and would the Pelicans find a team that's tanking that would be willing to take on all of this? Because remember, DeMarcus Cousins is leaving at the end of the year. I don't think he's going to stay in New Orleans, especially if Anthony Davis isn't there. You look at Anthony Davis too. I think about this is, like you had said, all of his injuries bother me. Like that's something that I think would be the biggest hindrance is his health. Or, you know, he's had a ton of different injuries. He's clipped only plus 70 games in a season once, and that was last season. He played in 75 games last season. He's averaging 36 minutes a night in that season. But the previous four seasons, he's battled injuries. He's battled nagging things that have gone on. But it's definitely interesting. I think for a team like the Lakers, who would rather be good sooner rather than later, if you're willing to put on the board Kyle Kuzma or Brandon Ingram, you know, pretty much anybody on that Lakers roster, you should say to the Pelicans, if you are serious about acquiring Anthony Davis, hey, go ahead and pick three guys and let's get a deal done here. Because then, you know, there was the inclination that Paul George is going to be a free agent and maybe he's going to go to LA or LeBron's going to go to LA. Like, do they wonder if what they've got right now currently constructed in LA, is that enough to bring LeBron there? If they go out and trade away 2, 3, 4 pieces that were sort of supposed to be their core of this Lakers rebuild? Do they go away and trade that away for Anthony Davis? Does that entice guys like Paul George and LeBron more so than what they had already constructed there? It's an interesting dynamic, but like they said, like people said, like Anthony Davis is a top five player in this league, and there are very, very, very few guys that don't want to play with Anthony Davis right now. So it's an interesting scenario as his name's getting tossed out there too, as well with like the Boston Celtics and a few other teams that might have an interest in Anthony Davis. But I was always curious with the tanking teams too, but maybe they'll want to flip the script a little bit here and unload some of their core talent to try and acquire an Anthony Davis and sign on free agents to go for it immediately. But I think the Lakers are in that spot.
You know what? Let's put out a poll. We'll put out a poll on our Twitter feed at Locked On Bulls on Twitter and ask Bulls Nation, ask you guys, would you want to do that move? If you were the Bulls front office and you had the opportunity, would you mortgage everything you got right now, this young core, if it meant bringing in a guy like Anthony Davis?
Very interesting. I can't even say I don't think I would do it, just because Anthony Davis is so good and he's only 24 years old. He's already got 5 years of experience in the NBA. He's four-time All-Star, two-time All-NBA player, two-time All-Defense, 2012, 2013 first-team All-Rookie, and he was the 2016-2017 All-Star MVP. Like, he's got at least one MVP in his bag right now. Like, I feel like in his trick before his career is over, knock on wood, that it doesn't end early because of injury or anything like that, I think Anthony Davis has got definitely an MVP season or multiple MVP seasons in his future. Like, 24. Anthony Davis is only 24 years old, and he's already one of the top five best players in the NBA. That's why I'm so excited for this league, because you just look around the board and there are so many young, talented players out there. And then you combine it with the guys that are 27 to 33 and are still playing, like LeBron, at, you know, playing at the highest clip of his career. You've got other guys that are around. Like, the NBA is just so fascinating. And like, if you're not on board with the NBA right now, I don't know what you're doing, because it's an exciting league and there's a ton of talent across the board.
Absolutely. And speaking of which, we got 10 games tonight. Find our draft that we'll be doing at 5 o'clock tonight. Locked On Bulls, Jan 17 is the name of the draft. You can join, play with Jordan and I tonight. Some awesome fantasy basketball action.
Well, that's good about dude here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. I hope you enjoy the Warriors game tonight. Should be very interesting as well. Tomorrow, we got a special guest for you guys tomorrow. We'll announce it on Twitter tomorrow morning, but it should be a great conversation. You guys are going to enjoy it. A Chicago no-name from around here, so you're definitely going to enjoy tomorrow's episode. We'll have that for you and so much more. But I hope you enjoy the Bulls-Warriors game tonight. We'll bring you a brand new fresh episode tomorrow after this game, recapping this game with our guest as well. But for Jordan and Matt, enjoy Bulls-Warriors tonight.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.